Tuesday edition. If it's Tuesday, that means Suzanne Muchen will be here, the co-host of the Big Payoff podcast. Andrew Herman, an editor at DNA Info, talking about openings and closings. And one of the things we're going to talk to Andrew about is the Stockyards Bank, that they are trying to turn that into an energy bank. It's a Helmut Jahn project, and it comes out of the Architectural Biennial. You know, we talked with them last week. Well, this is one of the ideas that comes from the Biennial, so we'll kick that around with Andrew in just a couple of minutes. But we always start on Tuesdays, or most Tuesdays at any rate, with John Najarian. You see him on CNBC as well, the co-founder of the Najarian Family Offices, and he's on a phone line this afternoon. Mr. Najarian, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Great to be with you, Stephen. Thank you very much.
So, you know, I just tweeted, and I know you saw it. I was following Janet Yellen as she spoke in Cleveland, and Fed speak is just, it's just not a language I speak. It's not one I can understand. It's not one I can translate. I was watching the market. The Dow seemed to drop as she started to speak. It looks like it's come back a little bit now. And I've read a few accounts, but why don't you tell me, what did Janet Yellen say, and why did the market react the way it did?
The first part of what she said, Stephen, was that it would be imprudent to leave rates on hold until inflation reaches 2%, since virtually it's at 0% right now. She thinks if it runs to 2%, it's going to go much further, and thus the market thought that that would be a bit of a hawkish comment if indeed she felt that it would be necessary to raise rates before we start feeling inflation picking up. Then she coupled that with some pretty dovish comments about downward pressures on inflation and how they may be persistent in an unexpected way. Those are in quotes, unexpected way. And that low inflation is probably due to transitory factors, but there may be other things driving it. In other words, she was leaving the door open, and in questions, more or less, people are thinking that she is open to even cutting rates again. Nobody here really thought she'd say anything like that after much of the hawkish tone of her statements and other Fed speakers. So that's when the market made that turn, Stephen.
It was a little like Goldilocks, where she said that they should continue gradually, but then if you go too slow, it wouldn't work, that she was trying to strike this just right, and it was hard for me to follow.
Very much. And traditionally, it is just that way. I mean, she's on live right now at that conference in Cleveland and answering questions and so forth from a moderator who's going back and forth with her. So we're continuing to get reactions from her and from the market as to her statements.
So you're saying it might change a couple of times before you're done talking to me?
It could, yeah. Although the markets are doing just fine. I mean, you know, the Dow, S&P, and so forth. S&P is certainly in a nice place, just setting record after record, and the Dow isn't behind it by much today.
One of the stories that's a little clearer is this Equifax story. They've got trouble. The CEO was ousted today, stock down, I think, more than a percentage point. Is this the worst of it for them, or is that still to come?
Well, and the CEO said it was a retirement.
I know.
But it was a firing, and it was well-deserved because Equifax has completely mismanaged their business, apparently, for years. They didn't have enough error insurance in place, Stephen, to cover these sorts of issues. I was with a gentleman from J.P. Morgan Wealth Management, and he says J.P. Morgan spends $600 million a year on cybersecurity. And to see the minuscule amount that Equifax has spent over the years, it basically just left all of us open to this sort of hacking that we've now been exposed to and talking about. It's driven their stock down, and it's obviously bad for regular Americans who need now to really think seriously about freezing or locking up their these sorts of companies, so you can't just have somebody go in and look at your credit.
Right. Okay, so when I started doing this show a couple of years ago, I was convinced that corporations in this country didn't pay enough taxes, and wiser people such as yourself have done a pretty good job of maybe changing my mind. I still don't like to see it when a major corporation pays no taxes. But the president is going to, it looks like, unveil his tax plan tomorrow. I bring it up because there's a Wall Street Journal poll out saying 16% of Americans, only 16%, want to cut taxes for corporations. So You sold me a little bit, but how does the White House and how does business sell another, what are we looking at there, 84% of the American public to go along with this?
Well, there does need to be more attention paid to corporations and some of the games that they can play that individuals can't, as far as what they can write off on those taxes that they owe. I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I do think, however, that there are a number of levels that are just too high for the corporate tax, and one of them that I would address right away is the overseas earnings of these companies. I wouldn't let them get double taxed if they paid tax overseas. Of course, let them apply it here and so forth, but $3 trillion, if we even got 15% on that.
Bring that money back, home.
Yeah, that's nearly half a trillion dollars right there. I mean, $450 billion. These are big numbers. So I would like to see those things brought back, those amounts of money. And I'd like to see some sort of strings attached as far as if you don't, then the sorts of penalties that would apply would discourage anybody from doing that again.
We'll see what comes out of it tomorrow. What are you watching today? Any tips for us?
Well, I bought Adobe today. It's, of course, big. If it's anything to do with publishing on the Internet.
Wait, Adobe, you bought Adobe. You could do it for free. I do it for free online. Why would you buy Adobe?
Well, if you want to do many of the other things that Adobe does, I mean, yes, they have the readers, Adobe readers and so forth that are free. But if you need to actually publish on the Internet and so forth, which we do, and many corporations and individuals do, you need their stuff, whether it's for Photoshop or the rest of it. And Adobe had made better than a 10% correction from its high, and it was down here at 144, 143 this morning, so we jumped in and bought some because we think some of these stocks have been overdone on the slide.
John Najarian, thanks for joining us today. I look forward to next Tuesday.
Thank you, sir. Have a great one.
You bet. You too. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're going to Canaryville with Andrew Herman. Andrew Herman is the senior editor of DNA Info Chicago, joins us to talk about openings and closings in the city, and we are going to close out summer today, high in the low 70s tomorrow.
I tell you, I walk out of these freezing cold office towers into this hot sun. It feels great to me.
You like it, huh?
Yeah, I love it.
We're going to miss it soon, I know. Okay, let's go to Canaryville, because I love this story. We had the chairman of the Chicago Architectural Biennial in last week, talking, maybe the week before, talking about what they're doing. And here's a project coming out of that. From Helmut Jahn, who developed the State of Illinois Center, the Thompson Center, a lot of other Chicago spots, where they want to take the old Stockyards Bank and make it an energy bank.
Yeah.
All right, unpack that for me.
Right, so this is at 4146 South Halsted, and as you point out
there.
See
what I said, unpack? I meant, you know.
Yeah, okay. I get it.
I didn't mean it, but it worked.
Okay, so it used to serve the old Union Stockyards that did a lot of slaughtering of meat between 1865 and 1971. And anyway, so this was the local bank that served the neighborhood and served the Stockyards. It's been closed since 1971. It's an amazing-looking building. It's it's inspired by Independence Hall in Philadelphia, so it's got this big clock tower and beautiful brick.
City bought it, in 2008 or so to save it?
Right, a couple $100,000 the city paid for it.
And so Jan's got this idea of making it an energy bank, so it would be like a bank. I mean, like in the Stockyard days. You know, where they allocated resources. Now this would allocate energy.
Right. So this is based on a similar place in London, the Low Carbon Energy Center in London. And basically what it has, the one in London has boilers in it. And so they use natural gas to create energy. And then while you're creating the energy, there's a natural heat that is developed. And most of the time that just gets sent out into the atmosphere. But they would sort of redirect this heat and use it to heat buildings in the neighborhood.
So it would be a commercial production, and then the byproduct would be siphoned off to the neighborhood.
Right, right. So all energy production creates heat. Most of the time you don't use the heat part, and this is sort of, this makes it more green in that you waste less of the whole energy process.
This is a beautiful building. I don't see a lot of smokestacks or things coming out of that where energy would be.
Yeah, right? I was looking at some images from the one in London. I don't see smokestacks out of there either.
Well,
so
they know how to do it.
I'm not exactly sure how this is going to work, but this is a building in Canaryville that's been empty for three decades, and There has been quite a bit of growth around it. There's some homes that have been built there in the last decade or so, and some apartment buildings, and there's a lot of warehouses where the old stockyards used to be. So it's an area that could probably use some additional energy production.
And the what was the worst concert you ever saw at the amphitheater?
The worst. Wow. I think I may have seen Yes there.
Did you? I saw Van Halen.
That's the worst?
Well, it's the only one at the end, because that's torn down now, right?
That was Yes. I remember seeing Kansas there. I thought that was very good.
Well, that would be, that's more ag appropriate, I think.
Yeah, right.
Let's go up to Ravenswood real quick. We had a former deputy mayor of New York City on yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And he talked about, Dan Doktoroff was talking about how they created the High Line. It's about innovation in cities. And he said, what we need to do is we need to succeed in one city and then others will replicate it. He helped with the High Line. He said by the time they opened it, there were 35 similar parks being opened around the world.
Right.
We've got the 606 here, and now there's this low line going on in Lakeview. What's that about?
Yeah, so we know about the 606 trail. That's the one made out of the old train tracks. It goes from Wicker Park to Humboldt, and it's really done a lot of economic development has spurned that.
I like to look in the people's windows. You can see some great, not in the windows, but they've got great patios. I get patio envy walking up and down that trail.
So this is kind of a version of that. This is called the Low Line Project. This is in Lakeview, and what they want to do is develop some of the property underneath the Brown Line L, about a half a mile from Palina, between Southport and Palina. And what they would do is they'd build little plazas underneath the tracks.
So you could only talk to people every like 8 minutes, right?
It'd be like living near an airport, I would assume. But so they've released some ideas on what they would like it to look like. There's places to sit, room for food vendors, lots of artwork. And so this thing is underway, and they hope to begin construction next year.
I hope so. It sounds pretty cool. They consider it like a passageway. You're not going to spend the day there. You're going to pass through and take it in.
There's already a farmer's market at Southport, and people just stop talking every time the train goes by, and then they continue
on. They see the rust sort of float down into the tomatoes.
It seems kind of noisy to me, but you know, you get some a little bit of development like this, add some green space, and as we saw with the 606, all of a sudden things start taking off.
City living. People can read more where?
dnainfo.com/chicago.
We'll see you next week. By the way, I want to mention, you know, I mentioned a few times over the past couple of weeks about our trip to Norway, the WGN trip to Norway that I'm going to lead in June. And we never really actually formally advertised it, but it filled up in 11 days. So I appreciate your interest. We'll announce a few more trips for next year, but the Scandinavian trip is filled. You know, Scandinavia kind of cold and rainy. I was over the weekend on Sunday, it was such a beautiful day. I'm lounging on a floaty in a lake in southern Wisconsin. I'm thinking, what could be better today? And then maybe running a half marathon in these 85 degree humid conditions.
Have you ever tried that?
I've never. I don't even watch marathons. Suzanne Muchen is here, the co-host of The Big Payoff. You can listen to that at WGNradio.com. And she is a half marathoner.
I'm actually a full marathoner.
Really?
Nine times over.
And you went back for more on Sunday.
I went back for more. It was the kind of morning where had I not had the half and I woke up to those conditions, I would have been at a pool too.
Yeah. Oh, so it was
brutal.
Was it?
Brutal.
Nice to have finished?
It was nice. They also said they were going to have misters and ice to pass out, which was a big thing over the speaker.
Did you say, hey, why always the misters? Why not the misses?
I should have raised my hand. That's a good line. Meanwhile, everybody's like applauding, and that's such a great idea. Never saw one.
No, they just lied
to
you.
No ice, no mister.
It's encouragement, that's all.
Yeah.
Come on, honey. You know, you tell it like you tell your kids. It'll be just fine around the corner.
Right.
Okay, so most powerful women in the world.
Yeah.
Aside from you.
It's, you know, after me, there's a big drop.
Janet Yellen just spoke. I'm just going to keep moving. In Cleveland, and certainly is one of the more powerful women in the world.
For now.
And
if she's maintained
if
that
she's
role.
Reappointed.
Yep.
You make the argument about Angela Merkel.
Yeah. I think Angela Merkel has come out in the last, I don't know, year or so as being a real defender of democracy. First of all, as a woman, and I am going to say as a woman, because it is blatantly clear when you see her in meetings with her, you know, colleagues, shall we say it, that she's one among many. And she really is holding down the fort on what at least we here used to call democratic values. She was Time's most powerful or most important. Time uses that term, by the way, very specifically. they're not really talking about
the person of the year.
Yeah, the person of the year, but they define it more as who had the most influence in the media. That's why they've had people in the past like Adolf Hitler and, you know, people right. we don't love.
But so Merkel gets it a couple years
ago. She got it 2 years ago. And do you know who she was up against?
Oprah Winfrey.
No.
Who?
Kim Kardashian.
Oh, come on.
I kid you not. We had a Time magazine editor on our podcast. The point being, she's hardly a Kim Kardashian. And we have to ask ourselves the question, what is it about Angela Merkel that has continued to keep her in power? Certainly, on the surface, she seems a little like Hillary Clinton, and yet I think they are wildly different leaders different styles. Similar pantsuits, similar haircuts.
What is it that sets her apart then?
I think she doesn't even try in any way, shape, or form to care about what's being said about her. And even though Hillary Clinton used to say that she didn't care, you'd always see her reacting to it, her vocabulary, the basket of deplorables. She was always trying to defend that.
Is that because there's a difference in the system? I mean, I know that the Germans would vote for the leader of the party, but it's not quite the same as voting as for an individual for president.
I think that it is still a culture in which they are voting for a person. I do. And now they're not voting for a person like we say here, someone you'd want to have a beer with.
Right.
And so that, even though German beer, I'm sure, is good, but that's not who she tries to be.
Oh, here's the thing that keep in mind. I think that it's in Germany, they're voting not really for who would you like to have a beer with, but it's more like who could be the leader.
Who could really lead.
Right.
Who can get things done. The challenge she has now is she actually does not have a strong coalition.
Right.
Right. There's this far right that's come forward in Germany.
I was just trying to heap heat and you just blew right by it.
See, you didn't even want to talk about this topic.
The heap heating?
Uh-huh. Until I said it and explained it to you. And then you decided yourself that it was a good idea.
We should talk about heap heating today. Okay.
Thanks, Steve. I'm so glad you thought of that.
Thank you. But why don't you take a minute to, explain it in your words.
And then you can explain it.
I'll fill in the blanks.
Perfect. In a way that might feel more powerful.
More understandable.
Yeah.
Okay.
So mansplaining's been around for a while. Steve is an expert at it.
That's not true.
Okay, with me you are.
Okay.
But that's just for fun. And it really is this very familiar feeling for a lot of women where you say something in a setting like a meeting and it gets, let's just call it what it is, ignored. And then the guy next to you or down the table pretty much says the same thing and heads start nodding.
Or even worse than ignored, co-opted.
Yes, co-opted.
Right? So the women feel and they have experienced in many cases that they'll speak, they'll say something in a meeting and it doesn't work until the guy says
it. Until the guy says
it. Now, I have to tell you, let's talk a little out of school here. Terry Savage, when I first started doing this show, she said, Steve, you should come out after every break and give the Dow. That's what you'd be, you know, it'd
and
be
she
really
has
great.
Strong opinions.
She does. And she goes, it'd really, really be a great thing. I'm like, yeah, Terry, that's a great idea. Maybe we'll get to it. Well, finally, Bennett and I, over the past week, and if you listen closely, you'll notice I've been doing a little bit more just because it was always a good idea. I just never got around to it. So Terry was here last Wednesday. I said, Terry, by the way, we've come up with a great idea.
Oh, no.
And you should have seen the look on her face.
She probably turned.
She didn't know what to, because she really thought I was being serious, not giving her a hard time.
Yeah.
But so
he peed, which is, look.
That sounds terrible.
It does. Well, if you forget the T, it's not he peed, it's he peed.
It's like a little kid with a speech.
Right. That would be hard. But this hashtag has really taken off. In part, it's because it really is your experience. He repeated what I just said. And yet somehow heads are now nodding.
And it is a real thing.
It's a real thing. And I just have to say, the beauty of what's gone on with HeatPeated is many of the guys who've taken to Twitter are being self-deprecating. I think they're finally acknowledging, like, yeah, this is a thing.
Okay, so we've got a minute left.
Oh.
I wake up in the morning and I just don't like Gwyneth Paltrow and I don't know why.
How crazy is it? It's like she has become the person everybody loves to hate.
Why is that? Because she had her conscious partying with her husband?
No. Look, she's built this empire called Goop, and the reason we're talking about her is they launched this magazine, a print magazine with Condé Nast. It's flying off the newsstands. It's her pretty much naked on the cover in a mud bath with the title saying Earth to Gwyneth, which was a little tongue-in-cheek.
Nice,
I liked it. I think, look, she's someone who on the surface seems too good for her own sake.
It's a Martha Stewart thing.
It is a Martha Stewart, but she's even younger, prettier, sexier, more, you know, on the surface.
Just more.
More of right. a lot of things. And so I think women, on the one hand, really reject that kind of perfection.
And then they want to be her.
And then they want to be her.
Right.
And the whole wellness thing, which she's really pushed. Yeah.
So people are buying the magazine and covering it like men are buying.
And it really is. I have to admit, this is full disclosure, I have held myself back from purchasing it.
Because you don't want to be seen purchasing it?
Because I don't want to really go all in. But next week, I am going to be at an airport. And typically, as I'm getting on a plane, I do go look if there's a magazine.
So really, what it is you don't want to be seen. So if it's safe in an airport where you don't know anyone.
I might have to ask for that black plastic cover that they give on porn.
Yeah. Do they do that?
It's a thing.
I didn't know that. Okay. Suzanne Muchen, the co-host of The Big Payoff at WGNRadio.com and...
Everywhere.
Thank you.
Oh, the podcast?
Very well put, yes. Thanks.
Oh, you can get it everywhere. iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get podcasts on your app. And Steve's our biggest fan and
it's
listener.
It's one of my favorite podcasts.
Mm-hmm. I think among the top three.
Seven.
Easy.
A seven. Mm. This is the Wintrust. We'll see you next week.
Yes.
It is 12:52 here on 720 WGN. And as we said, in Terry Savage's honor, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 20 points so far this afternoon. Kelly Leonard is in the studio, the executive director at Second City, host of Getting to Yes and, a podcast you can listen to at WGNRadio.com and elsewhere. Kelly Leonard, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, I haven't seen you in a while.
I know.
You've been busy. Where you
been? I've been on the road.
Have you?
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of speaking dates.
Nice.
Keynotes for companies.
Do you
and
enjoy
things.
Doing that?
I do. I like talking to people.
No apprehension, no nerves, nothing.
Oh,
like that.
I totally get nerves. Right. But I have one of my little scientist friends gave me a thing to do.
What is that?
Don't say you're nervous, say you're excited, and actually say it out loud.
Which is kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if you are excited, you just have to figure out a way to harness that excitement.
It's like good stress.
Right.
You know, there's those endorphins that are good. So you just say, I'm excited, and then you go in with a kind of a different kind of attitude.
All right. Getting to yes and, as we've talked about this, an improv trick. When you're doing improv, you always say yes, and then you move the joke forward.
Yeah, you can't say no. That'll stop everything.
It wouldn't work.
Nope.
Getting to yes and. All right. So this week you're talking to the founder of the Institute for the Future of Learning.
Yeah, Julie Wilson.
That's a pretty big institute, important institute. What's up?
Well,
that.
She's cool. She was at Harvard for years and worked in organizational stuff and business stuff. And ironically, what she ended up looking at more was elementary school and high school and feeling like we're getting it wrong. She talks about the tyranny of standardized tests. And my favorite aspect about her is this thing that she brings up, which is you don't learn from the successes, you learn from the failures.
Right.
And too often, like as you know, tutors or other people will jump in and give the kid the answer. And we need to actually let kids get it wrong.
Or they teach testing. They don't teach material. They teach testing skills.
How to get it right on the test.
Right.
And this whole thing of experiential learning, of being allowed to risk and fail. And then she says this thing, which I think is very smart, which is we all want our kids to be responsible. They don't get responsible if you don't give them responsibility.
If you don't let them fail a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I teased this segment by saying we're going to talk about the three aspects that the World Economic Forum says you will need by 2020.
Right. So that's really interesting. So they said that you're going to need the skills of complex problem solving, critical thinking, and creativity.
Which none of them is rote history or mathematics,
nope.
But it's more about the formula of coming up with a mathematics right. problem. Okay, so my kids went through a great school system up in Deerfield.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they got that stuff.
Yeah, I feel like I got that stuff too at Nutrier.
Okay.
But I don't think a lot of kids are getting that in a lot of different schools, especially if you look at some of the No Child Left Behind stuff and some of the things that are happening in the city at the public schools where they can barely hang on. You know, they always talk about STEM education, and I'm like, I'd like to talk about STEAM education, adding in the A for
right.
arts.
And they are doing that more and more.
Yeah, they are. But it's not everywhere, and there's, you know, the other problems is that the politicians don't seem to understand what the educators know, and things get very top heavy, and there's lots of those issues, and what we really need to do is empower our kids that they can, you know, get arts education, that they, in addition to science, that they have the opportunity to fail, they have the opportunity to risk. And this is a partnership between teachers and kids.
Julie Wilson says that the current education system perpetuates learned helplessness.
Yeah.
Sort that out for me.
Yeah, well, I think that's the point you made first, that tests become more important than the learning, that the kids become reliant on gaming the system, which is a big part of this. I mean, you can kind of figure out how to get the A. I mean, I remember this from my first year of college, which was not Kelly Leonard's best moment. But I got close to straight A's because I knew that all I needed to do was A, show up to class and do kind of the bare minimum. And it took me to sort of decide and change my situation and go to a different school that I then started doing actual learning.
It's kind of funny you say that because I remember that being excited about the idea of learning how to think.
Yes.
Right? Not so much learning the answers, but I'm kind of being taught here different ways to think, critical thinking.
Sure, and this is navigating an uncertain future. We don't know what jobs are going to exist in 20, 30 years, and we don't know what the world's going to look like. And we might as well learn things like, managing conflict. How about that?
Who would need that?
When would we ever need a managing conflict?
The name of the podcast, Getting to Yes, and you can check it out at WGNRadio.com. Kelly Leonard, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.